Hello, all you amazing moms. It's me, Michelle. And I know if you're dealing with divorce, it can be daunting. Trust me. But with HelloDivorce.com, you're not alone. They offer a refreshingly simple, affordable, and stress-free divorce alternative without skimping on the expert support you know you need for this crucial transition. Listen, whether it's straightforward separation or you're tackling complex legal and financial negotiations, Hello Divorce is going to ensure that you navigate from uncertainty to confident clarity. Their best-in-class, five-star customer service team is your guide to setting up for success in this next chapter. Plus, come on, they're one of America's most innovative companies. Mention my name, Michelle, and they're going to treat you extra special. Don't wait, though. You got to start shaping your brighter future today. Visit hellodivorce.com/moms because moving on means moving up. We're in this together, babes. And with Hello Divorce, you've got the support to thrive. Hi, moms. If you're looking to sell your engagement jewelry, Worthy is the perfect option. With over 45,000 satisfied customers, Worthy is the most trusted name in the business. Would I bring you anything less? Worthy offers competitive auctions and gets you the best deal possible on your jewelry. Plus, I've connected with Worthy on a special bonus offer for the Moms Moving On community, a $100 Amazon gift card when your jewelry sells for over $1,500. Ready to move on from that engagement ring? Get started today at worthy.com/moms. That's worthy.com/moms for the special bonus offer.
This week on Moms Moving On.
Think about how many of us leave a relationship and then become everything. That's amazing, right?
But that's where you say leaving the relationship is love. Like, some people are going to hear this and say, well, you know, my spouse left me because they didn't love me. But on some level, and this is what I tell the people who didn't want the split, you're going to get to a place where you realize that that person leaving was the best thing that could have happened for you, because they're giving you the space for your freedom and your liberation and your possibilities of finding a love that actually suits you. When you know you are not right for somebody, you are doing them the ultimate favor by walking away. And nobody likes to hear that, but, you know, such is life.
Well, that's part of, well, first off, we know it's true because it's happening.
Life moves on, so why shouldn't we? This is Michelle Dempsey-Moltak, your host of Moms Moving On, navigating divorce, co-parenting, single motherhood, and moving on.
You guys, I feel like dreams do come true. I have wanted to have a conversation with this person for so long. I share his stuff pretty frequently. If you're not familiar with the man behind the mic today, his name is Mark Groves, and he is, I think, some would say he's brave for being a truth teller and someone who's so authentic to his core about what he believes in. But I think he's human like the rest of us, and he is putting out his new book, Liberated Love, with his wife, which I think is really, really, really beautiful. Mark, I'm going to let you do your, you know, intro, but he is just the man of connection and all things creating the love. So we're so happy to have you here today, Mark.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to be here. What a nice introduction.
Well, you've earned it, my friend.
Yeah, thank you. It's interesting that, you know, telling the truth or participating in conversations about the truth is considered courageous, you know, in today's world.
Isn't that sad?
Yeah, I think it, from a relational perspective, it really speaks to the evolution of relationship, which is that relationship itself was not constructed to be a container of truth. It was not. It was to grow your families, to have more in-laws, to grow your tribes, to share resources. Marriage was not built for love. And, you know, I think this just speaks to like a greater cultural phenomenon, which is that politics, all these types of things, we're not meant to be bastions of truth, mm-hmm. you know, because the truth is disruptive and it's actually in service of love. And I think when we start to see that love, it often gets confounded with compassion, and don't get me wrong, love is compassionate, mm-hmm. but I just mean that it's only that, that if it causes disruption or dysregulation or emotional reactivity, that it's not love. And it's like, well, actually.
Or if your partner doesn't make you happy at every moment of the day and has an opinion different than yours, they're gaslighting you and they're toxic, because that's what Instagram would tell you.
Yeah. And they're probably a narcissist.
Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah. Big letter N on their chest. Okay. Glad we've gotten that out of the way. It seems we're on the same page. You have a powerful story, and it's, I really, you know, in reading your website, the whole rock bottom thing, I really align with, because I've been there too. And like you, used it as a place to catapult myself. But you did the seemingly like, you took the safe route. You did the things you're supposed to do, the shoulds and the, you know, you followed the pack for a little bit, and it, and not in a bad way, but it seems like at some point in your life, you were like, you know what? This ain't for me. I got to do things in my truth. I got to do it the Mark way. So what was that turning point like for you?
It was terrifying. You know, I think it was because when I was in a relationship in my late 20s, I got engaged, and I didn't want to get engaged, but I got engaged. And the person I was engaged to, the woman, incredible, like an incredible person, but I didn't want to. I didn't know why I didn't want to, but I really had internalized, like, what's wrong with me that I don't want to be in this relationship? This is what I'm supposed to desire. And when I ended that engagement, I remember thinking to myself, like, holy moly, like, I let this momentum of what I'm supposed to do and who I'm supposed to be run so much of my life. And I thought to myself, like, when was the last time that I really felt connected to who I was? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it had been 10 years, 12 years, 15 years. It was so long. And I made a rule that day of realization that I would have all the conversations I didn't want to have, because I realized that was what kept me in all these prisons, because I was so terrified of conflict. I was so terrified of bringing forward the thing that might hurt, you know, cause emotional disruption, cause someone to not like me, you know, and the leaving that engagement was one of, I would say, if not the main first time in my life that I chose something I desired, despite what society told me, despite what the impact would be on the person I was in relationship with. Mm-hmm. But I recognized, like, it's not love to choose somebody out of have to. You know, that's not love. And we're taught that it is. And that's what's so it's not anyone's fault, but right. It is our responsibility.
You know, in my world of divorce and co-parenting and helping people through those chapters of their lives, there's not a client that I've had who hasn't been able to admit to themselves that at some point in the engagement, getting married, planning for the wedding process, they will say to me, you know, on some level, I knew it wasn't right, but my best friend had just gotten married, or my parents were getting older and I felt really pressured. And I myself and my ex-husband too, we both had moments where it was like shining in our faces where we knew it wasn't right. But you know what? Everything had been paid for. The wedding was planned. Let's give it a shot and see what happens. Naturally, it didn't work out. But to me, that's the brave thing, right? Like, not speaking your truth on social media, but the bravery is in knowing what's not right for you, whether it's before the wedding or, like most of us, after, realizing that, okay, I have to choose me now. And you're so lucky you were able to do that when you did, because I'm sure it turns your life upside down in the best way possible.
Yeah, it did. And it led to the birth of this work, which I'm, you know, I'd imagine was your experience as well. Mm-hmm. It's like, I wanted to desperately understand relationships, and like, why would someone get engaged when they don't want to? Why, what makes some relationships great and others not? Like, why wasn't I taught this? Why was I so good at talking about everything but my feelings? And why did I place everybody else ahead of me? Like, where did that come from? And when I started to write about what I was learning, you know, it took me 3 or 4 years to get the courage to hit publish on anything. But when I finally did, it was just like, oh my God, I feel the same way. Or finally, this is being put into words. Like, I started to see that my healing was other people's healing. And, you know, I thought one of the first things I did is I read this book called Well, one, I read Man's Search for Meaning, and that was a profound shifting book for me. But the book I really wanted to understand marriage, so I read the book, The History of Marriage, by Stephanie Coons. And that completely shattered my mind, because all of a sudden I thought, oh my God, as a growing up Catholic, I was just like, I was not taught any realities about relationship. Not that there isn't some beauty in religious expression, but I just felt like there was a lot of like, let's not look at the thing. Let's create agreements that there's no divorce is not okay. That's shamed. And what I started to see was that relationship had a hierarchy. So if you're married, you're considered more successful or better than someone who's engaged, and then someone who's dating.
There's even a tax benefit. Yeah.
Right. And then if you're single, and then God forbid you're divorced. And so what I started to see was that divorce, of course, there's different contexts to why people get divorced. Either way, you're liberated. But when someone chose divorce in the face of all the things, I was like, that is so courageous. Like that to me was a green flag, you know? And of course people can go through endings of relationship and never be introspective. So this isn't about those people, but this is about the people who choose to leave or through the breakup were awakened. Like, oh my gosh, well, I can't believe all this. Yeah.
And I'm for sure. I always say it's a two-step moving on process. The first step is making the decision to divorce, but the real work is then like latching on to the self-awareness. Like you got to have that. And you have to understand that even if you were in this relationship, that this other person was so terrible, you were in the relationship. So what do we need to take forward from that and heal from and grow from? Because I believe without doing that second part, you might as well have just stayed married, right? Because, and we'll talk about codependency, but that kind of stuff never breaks if you can't really look into yourself and understand the why behind why you were in the relationship. And relationships happen sometimes so much faster and more intensely than we anticipate, and we're stuck in them already. I'm saying we in the collective, people who have a hard time leaving bad situations, and I don't want to make them feel like they're doing something wrong, but it is very difficult sometimes to see outside of what you're in the moment and that there may be better out there. But if you do take that brave first step, it's like the perfect window of opportunity to become a whole new person if you're not scared to, right? So, okay, I digress. I wanna talk about, you ultimately ended up getting married, and your whole mission, I mean, your handle on social media is create the love. So as a human connection expert, what does love mean to you? What does it really look like to you behind the scenes?
Love to me is telling the truth. Love to me is honoring the truth over everything. That became the most liberating principle, no pun on our book, but that became the most liberating principle of liberated love, was that the container of our relationship was actually going to be in service of us being honest with one another about our own challenges, the challenges we're having in relationship, the challenges we're having with each other. Because, you know, I learned in my late 20s, when I went through that engagement ending, that there was so much potency in an ending. There was so much potency in my heartbreak. There was so much potency in leaving. There was so much love in the decision to leave the relationship. And I think for a lot of people, that can be hard to hold, because that's against the cultural narrative that endings are not loving. The loving thing to do is to stay above all. And my wife and I made a commitment when we were not married that the truth will be the thing we lay at the altar of our relationship first. If the relationship itself can hold that and expand and grow from that, that's beautiful. Now we're really cooking. But if a relationship can't hold truth, like, hey, I notice you have a problem with drinking. If the person can't hold that truth and that be actually brought forward, and then they, let's say the appropriate step in that context is to enter sobriety, they're being offered a truth from their partner. They have the option to sit with that reality. And this is very similar to like if we get defensive in dialogue, right? In conflict, which I'm a recovering defender. So this isn't from any pulpit. This is from my own experience, which is that the antidote to defensiveness, one of the main ones, is when someone gives you feedback. Now, obviously, the structure of feedback is important, but when someone tells you something about what they're experiencing with you, the antidote to defensiveness is to say, I can see some truth in what you're saying.
Right.
That's liberated love.
Yeah.
Because I'm not seeing what you're telling me as a criticism of my worth. I'm seeing it as a way to liberate myself from patterns that are not functional or conducive to healthy relating.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So the premise that we make in the book, the sort of core thesis, is that the material that comes up in any of your relationships, but especially in your romantic ones, regardless of whether you're single or dating or in a long-term relationship or married, the material that comes forward, the triggers that come forward, these are all material to grow, change, heal, and evolve and step into your highest potential. So
preach.
Think about how many of us leave a relationship and then become everything. That's amazing, right?
But that's where you say leaving the relationship is love. Like, some people are going to hear this and say, well, you know, my spouse left me because they didn't love me. But on some level, and this is what I tell the people who didn't want the split, you're going to get to a place where you realize that that person leaving was the best thing that could have happened for you, because they're giving you the space for your freedom and your liberation and your possibilities of finding a love that actually suits you. When you know you are not right for somebody, you are doing them the ultimate favor by walking away. And nobody likes to hear that, but, you know, such is life.
Well, first off, we know it's true because it's happening. So it can only be in service of your evolution. Even if it means you have to be, look, we're not negating the experience of the pain of betrayal, of being left, of feeling abandoned, of feeling rejected. I will say that whenever your value or your worth is in your relational status and you feel completely devastated by something, again, not minimizing that, but I'll say you need everything that you place your value in will need to leave you so you can recognize it doesn't live there.
100%.
And the big thing about divorce or a breakup is that if a relationship is not for them, it's not for you. Full stop. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no conditions to that. It's like, if they leave you, you don't want them. Like that. And so this is where the healing or the material is being brought forward, which is, why am I taking more therapy, reading more books? I mean, read this one, but reading more books, listening to more podcasts, listen to this one, listen to Mom's Moving On. What I'm saying, though, is that at some point, there has to be the recognition that one person can never be doing the work of two. And so even the recognition that we've been trying to convince someone to change, or we've been not showing up and that's why they left. It's like, either way, all of that is informing us that we have healing to do. How long have I been trying to do the work of two people? Mm-hmm. Probably since I was a kid. How long have I been withdrawn from connection? Probably since I was a kid. So these patterns need to come forward, because if you think of, you know, if you're listening to this or watching this, you probably have the desire to create a really wonderful life and a beautiful relationship.
Yep.
Well, here's how evolution works. Here's how the universe works. Here's how it doesn't matter your belief system. It will all organize around this one premise, that everything in your life is always generating the possibility of your evolution. So when you say, I want to create a beautiful life, I want to create a magical relationship, I want liberated love, everything that is not that will need to be brought forward to be able to be healed. So that's why when someone leaves you and you say, they shouldn't have left me, or my life would be so much better had they not, one, that's not reality. So you can't even say that. You don't even live in that alternate timeline. But
well,
living
that
in that
mindset, that's much easier to rest in. Right.
Well, and the alternate reality is causing your suffering. So you believe you should be somewhere where you're not. So that's suffering, because now you have an alternate life that you're not living. So you're not living this one. And it is actually in the record, just the acceptance of what's true. We have a whole section of our book, a whole chapter called Getting Right with Reality. Because till you actually accept your circumstances and what you said is like, wherever you go, there you are. So like, you are the common denominator of everything in your life. So there's
like not
an option.
That's, I mean, you, it's, you know, so Like you said, it happens after divorce where you're like, you become all of the things. You see like, oh, okay. If not for everybody, there's a lot of people who will go to the end of their lives dying on the hill that everything is everybody else's fault and they are not the root cause of their suffering. But most cases, people start to realize where they've put themselves in those predicaments or how their childhood led them to repeating certain behaviors. And that's where the everything happens, but that is truth in itself. And then everyone around you can't handle that because, oh my God, you're enlightened. And how dare you right. be enlightened in such a miserable society that we live in?
Well, yeah, especially a society that really does celebrate or prop up victim mindset, which I want to give context to what I'm saying, which is that the invitation of exiting from the place that everything happens to me is not the negation of the reality that things have happened to us, right? Mm-hmm. So the world we currently live in is only really offering us binaries. You're either pro something or you're against it. You're either left or you're right. Those are all constructs. They're not actually true. It's just like you're either a victim or you're a radical responsibility life crusher. Mm-hmm. But what life requires of us is that we hold the complexity of opposing experiences. So I can have been the victim of betrayal, abuse, anything like that. And because I can't change what happened, which is again trying to create an alternate timeline. If this had not happened, I would not. It's like, I can't change what happened. So since we just agree that that's how time works, unless you got a time machine, amazing. But it's like, we agree that you can't change it. Since you can't change it, do something with it. And it's what we do with it that separates people who expand from their experiences and people who contract. And that, if you think about it, where I said that society does actually celebrate staying in that spot, and that's human nature. It's like we bond based on, that's trauma bonding. That's like if you put up two GoFundMes and one has a story of trauma and the other one doesn't, the one with the story of trauma gets more money. So this is just how human nature works. A lot of us learn that if we lead with our wounds, we will engage and manipulate people. It's very unconscious to enact empathy from them and hook them into our story.
Yes.
In the book, we call these unconscious, they're codependent hooks, and they're more complex than the simplicity of what I'm saying. But what they are is these really, they're strategies to intuit people, but also to keep them close. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of ways we do it. We pay for things. That's one way that we keep people close. We hypersexualize ourselves. There's lots of different things. We do everything for everybody. Because mm-hmm. if I do everything for everyone, you're going to need me. And if you need me, you can't leave me.
Yep. Yep. I'm in school right now studying to be a marriage and family therapist. And the belief behind all that is that this nonlinear concept of, you know, whereas psychology and psychotherapy is very, you know, this happens, so this. But with marriage and family therapy, it's the opposite. It's like we're all sort of in this cycle and we all sort of feed off of each other's stuff. And one can't happen without the other. And when you pull back and you're able to look at things through that lens, I think, you know, that's where you can create the love for yourself. They're calling it the Bible for all divorcing moms. I can't believe it, but that's what they've said about my book, Moms Moving On, Real Life Advice on Conquering Divorce, Co-parenting Through Conflict, and Becoming Your Best Self. Moms Moving On is filled with practical, actionable, and empowering advice from someone who's been through it and come out on the other side, me. Through inspirational stories, rituals, journal prompts, and my guidance, you'll learn how to navigate your divorce with confidence, adjust to life as a single mom, shift your perspective to find your way back to your best self, and create the life you truly deserve. It's available in paperback, hardcover, audiobook, and Kindle. So go get my book. I promise you won't regret it.
When someone chose divorce in the face of all the things, I was like, that is so courageous. Like, that to me was a green flag, you know? And of course, people can go through endings of relationship and never be introspective. So this isn't about those people. But this is about the people who choose to leave or through the breakup were awakened. Like, oh my gosh, well, I can't believe all this. Yeah.
And I'm for sure, I always say it's a two-step moving on process. The first step is making the decision to divorce, but the real work is then like latching on to the self-awareness. Like, you got to have that. And you have to understand that even if you were in this relationship that this other person was so terrible, you were in the relationship. So what do we need to take forward from that and heal from and grow from? Because I believe without doing that second part, you might as well have just stayed married. I'm interested to know. So your co-author is your wife. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling this is like a beautiful, deep, like connected, soul-filled relationship. And I want to hear about it and how you guys decided that you needed to write a book together.
Oh, man. I think of all the things that had to happen for a book to be birthed, because we had our son just over a year ago and we wrote the book. Yeah, it was wild. So we are birthing the book to the world after that, but we wrote it while my wife was pregnant with our son. And I would say that writing a book together was great preparation to have a child, which I never thought would be like, oh, that's a good training ground. But it was that we had two different experiences, two different perspectives, two different lenses of the world, two different ways of doing things, two different ways of writing and creating that had to come together in somehow and create a book. And the book really, like, there was just such a sense between us that the world needs this book now, and not from an egoic place, but because the book is structured where it's about the story of our own relationship. It tells client stories, but it also goes through the skill sets that, whether you're single, dating, or in a relationship, that allow you to walk from the place of codependency to liberated love. Now, codependency is a term that's mostly popularized through the really amazing book from Melody Beattie, which is called Codependent No More. And that premise of that book was really based on Al-Anon, like being in relationship with addicts. And so we define the book, we define codependency in the book as any relational dynamic where we source safety at the expense of our own needs, our own sense of self and overall well-being.
You're literally making everyone who's listening to this go, oh, wait, that sounds really familiar.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is we looked at the way we related, and here we are, two people who are, you know, pretty introspective, self-aware, teach relational things. And we didn't see these extra layers of self-abandonment that we were bringing to our relationship together that actually led to, so the story going from like relationship 1.0, which we were together 4 years and then we broke up and it was over. We were done. In the book, we call that the sacred pause, and then relationship 2.0. And throughout that, we talk about attachment so people can understand how, you know, the relationship blueprint we were taught, because it's important to get context for why you do what you do. It's not because I don't actually think you need context to change anything. You just need to know you don't like a behavior. But what context does is it allows us to see that it's not our fault. So it gives us, it allows us to say, well, how could I not have done the thing I do? It makes sense. Like, it's the perfect adaptive strategy. Like, if I was the one who's always trying to chase people and support them and get them to change, that's the perfect adaptive strategy. If you have a parent who's a narcissist, who's an alcoholic, who you had to take care of your little brothers and sisters, your dad was never around. Like, all these are perfect until you get to become an adult and you realize that they're not in service of the love you actually want to create. So, yeah, the book was and continues to be a way of being, like the principles, just the way that we're committed to. I mean, those are part of our agreements of our marriage, is to put truth ahead of everything, to honor each other's path as our own, and to have mutual positive regard, that there's always a level of respect that's maintained. And in the book, we talk about rupture and repair because that's such an important, you know, great relationships aren't absent of conflict. It's just how they handle it. And one of my favorite quotes from John Gottman is, baby, when you're upset, the world stops and I listen. And so that's one of the real core tenets of what we believe in.
I just signed up for the Gottman training.
Oh gosh, so good.
Yeah. Level one, I'm starting slow. But yeah, no, I think it's all brilliant stuff. So something that I thought was interesting in reading about your book is that it says that you'll explore your own original relationship blueprints. Does this mean we are looking back at the relationships of the past and connecting dots? Because I tend to think that's really important.
Yeah. So exactly. Looking at family of origin, looking at our parents, their dynamic, looking at our dynamic in the family system. And really family systems, but also cultures, are built around not confronting deep truths. You know, like if, let's say, mom's an addict of some sort, everybody in the family will take on a role, which we often call personality, in order to allow that system to maintain, you know, to survive, and not necessarily to confront that person's addiction, but rather to somehow make it through. And, you know, one of the things that brings us to growth, which I find so fascinating, is things like a breakup, right? But it's, I'm not good at this thing and I want to become good at it. Or something's wrong with the way I relate and I need to get better at that. So usually what brings us to growth is the belief that there's something wrong with us. And what happens through growth is there has to be a transition to where it's not correlated to my core identity. I'm neither broken nor I'm not broken. It has nothing to do with my brokenness. It is just the experience that I've had that's created this type of behavior. And because it's a behavior, I can change it.
I can change it. Do you, you mentioned family systems, which I have studied and think is, you know, probably the most fascinating part of my education right now. Do you break it down a little bit in the book? Because for anybody listening, if you want to know why you are, who you are, where you are, and what you're doing, just look into it a little bit. It was, I think my first semester studying marriage and family therapy was probably the most eye-opening 3 months of my life. It was like therapy for me, really, on another level.
Yeah. So we talk about, so we adapt, we talk about all the different masks that people take on, and we correlate those to your experience in your family, your childhood. And then we also talk about blind spots, which are, again, things we inherit. So we talk about inheriting these patterns of relational behavior. And that's, you know, one of the other core tenets of what we talk about is like, how beautiful is it that your lineage is trusting you with the healing of this? Like, how beautiful is it that your relationships, the way that you relate, even if it's the people you pick on Tinder, they are inviting you to change. Like, what a beautiful thing that you now have the awareness. You're no longer reacting to life. You're actually taking a pause and saying, is this the type of life and relationship I want to create? And really, that's when I think about the word awakening. I mean, it sounds like it should be being like a monk on a mountain without any thoughts and no emotions. But it really is just about starting to ask questions. Who
am I? And understanding yourself. Yeah. Yes, 100%.
Who am I really? Do I like who I am? Is it helpful? Is it not? What's my personality construct?
Is it working for me here? Like, am I getting the most out of life here being who I am? And so many people can't ask that question. And you know, it's if you look through the comments section of any of my posts on Instagram, you'll see very clearly the people who have taken this, you know, difficult life experience, such as divorce, and really made a pivot and decided, you know what, I've got one life, I'm going to make the rest of it the best of it. And then there's the other half who are like, well, I'm mad. And so fuck you, because you just referenced divorce in a post, you know, like they're split into two. And very often, and I hate to say this, no disrespect to the male population, but very often I find, because I work with both genders and, you know, people, men who take on, you know, more of the household role and men who are out of the house more. And I work with all sorts of people, but most often it's the men who stay very angry at the fact that a woman left and bettered herself. And, you know, women in hindsight will look back, they'll do the work and they'll read the books and the Liberated Love and the Mom's Moving On. And they'll see, okay, you know what? I didn't want it to happen, but I'm happy it did. Very often men have a hard time with that. And I'm wondering if you have like explored that a little bit, because you're enlightened and self-aware as fuck, whereas a lot of guys struggle to get to that point.
Oh, I'm not going to take the title of enlightened because the universe will smack me with a different lesson. I'll take self-aware. I joke, but I do appreciate that thought. And I agree, you know, I think it's 70% of divorces are, and I've even heard the quote 80, but when I looked at the data, it was 70.
70 initiated by women.
Yeah. And so that a lot of the sort of red pill, which is the more we would call, like, I'm speaking to an archetype. I don't like to use these, but I think just for the sake of people understanding what we're talking about, red pill community is more considered like right wing extreme male movement. So a lot of the argument there is that women are the ones ruining the sanctity of marriage.
Shouldn't have educated those women. Should have
right,
kept them
exactly.
Home.
So it's because men don't have a great capacity for shame in general. And I'd argue that that's culturally derived. That's also because
for
we,
sure.
up until recently, sent men to war to die and then don't support them in being able to process that. There's not a lot of emotions that men are safe to feel. All of this gives context, but it doesn't give excuse, right? We're mm-hmm. still responsible ultimately for how we show up.
The context is for sure important. And this is, you know, I always bring this up. Like, you're upset with how your spouse or your ex handles emotions. Well, were they taught to handle emotions? Like, can we blame them for something, you know, that they didn't actually have the opportunity to learn? So yeah, I see what you're saying.
Well, but we're also need to be in service of the growth of the relationship. So, you know, if my partner says to me, like, look, I don't know, I don't like how we handle conflict. Your anger can sometimes be really hard for me to be with when we're just trying to talk about leaving a wet towel on the bed, you know, and if we're really looking at the feedback we're getting from our partner as being in service of our growth, that is an opportunity to learn how to communicate better. And if you listen over time, you don't hear those complaints, which are really unmet emotional needs, they're going to leave you. And that's not the fault of the person leaving. That's the fault of the lack of change. Mm-hmm. So, you know, women have a much more accurate barometer of relational health. And I would argue that that's largely due to evolution because they needed to. You need to, because if the relationship is not emotionally safe, you can actually be harmed. So why is 85% of relational content consumed by women? I remember Harriet Lerner, a famous psychologist, said it's because the subordinate group always needs to learn the needs and nuances of the dominant group in order to survive.
To survive. It's survival.
Exactly. So that's why there's a lower tolerance. This is actually maybe true why when you look at different gender constructs in relationship, lesbians get divorced at a higher rate because maybe there's less tolerance for relational dysfunction.
Bullshit, yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of like if we got men out of the picture, then the divorce rate would go down, but it actually goes up, which is kind of wild. And I think it's an interesting thing to explore. But with all that said, I do think it's a necessary aspect of the reconstruction of relationships and especially the construction of things like marriage. You know, when I hear someone say, I never want to get married again, my question to them is, how do you define marriage? Because if you define it by high conflict, dysfunction, betrayal, then of course, why would you not want to? But why not create something that actually feels aligned for you? And whenever I hear someone get reactive about divorce or they lie about their divorce, they don't want to share it when they're dating, I'm like, then you're still ashamed of it. It still owns you. And it's like, own that shit. My wife was divorced before I met her. My favorite thing of her past is like the thing that woke her up. It's the thing that I loved it when I heard it. Like, wow, you left all that. You lost every, like your community. You lost all that and how you left. Tough, but you did it.
Yep.
And even how the relationship ended, she was not proud of, but it was like, we do what we do at the level of awareness we have at the time. So all that to be said is like, of course, relationships need to be left when they need to be recreated in a different way. And men need to learn emotional fluency. And I think the paradox is that in order to step into emotional fluency, the man has to rebel against the definition of masculinity. So that is a hard thing to hold, because also what happens is ultimately men want to model the men who are being chosen by women.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that's
women,
okay, because we all want to look like supermodels as women. So, you know, makes sense.
Right. So it's, well, it's like if women choose men who are emotionally fluent, then more men will aspire to be emotionally fluent.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so it's a both and, because I look at, there's circumstances now where like a man of high power has been dating like six or seven chicks and being quite deceptive about it. And I think that's an important thing to see, that we actually like promote and prop up into powerful positions narcissistic tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a both end, because you have one, the propping up of these behaviors. Then you also have people not holding men accountable who engage in those types of behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
But then you also have some women who would choose him in an instant, even though they know all this about him, because he is a powerful, outspoken, intelligent, handsome, muscular man. So right. It's a both and, if that makes sense.
For sure. No, I mean, there, I think we're in an era now, though, where women, even younger, like the 20-year-olds, whatever they are, Gen Z, they're looking for a softer, a man who has embraced his, I don't want to say femininity, but his ability to be emotionally available and go to therapy. Like they're saying therapy is the new 6-1 for us ladies.
Oh,
you know, like
that's actually really funny.
But
therapy
it's,
is know, the new 6-1.
When I met my now husband after I got separated, I'm like, have you been to therapy? Tell me about your childhood. How much do you, you know, bring your childhood into new experiences? These are things that you don't realize are so important, because taking it back to where we started, you do the shoulds. You should marry somebody with a good profession. You should, it should look good on paper and everything else will fall into place.
Right. The good on paper. Whew, that's the death of the paper. You know, it's.
Except for your book. Your book is good on paper.
Yours as well. What I think is really interesting is that what we don't trust in kindness. So when men present as nice guys, but I would say this is true of any gender. When people present as being overtly kind, it's often codependency. It's mm-hmm. often manipulation. Not always, but if you're someone who feels like you are always trying to fix people, you're dating projects, you date people just out of relationships, everyone you date seems to have something going on that you would like to help support and change. You often feel resentment. You have, and that you might not even be able to identify. It could just be a feeling in your stomach that you always have, like, why don't I matter? What about me? What I notice when people leave toxic relationships and they start dating kinder people and they like enter that world. And what's happening is, so in the book, we actually overarch the whole process with the nervous system, because mm-hmm. no transformation is complete without nervous system work. And I would even argue, working with somatic therapists, for me at least, has been the most powerful change, because so many of the things that are going on in how we relate are even created before we have language. So yeah. They're pre-verbal. So talk therapy is not necessarily the access point. Although what's really powerful about a therapist or a trained coach is that you are co-regulating with them. So your nervous mm-hmm. system is learning how to be in regulation. But I say all that because like, in order to transform and change, and you start to date people who are more reliable, trustworthy, they text back, etc. What I'll hear a lot of people say is, so I guess I should just stay with them longer to, but I just don't feel attracted to them. So am I just supposed to never be attracted to this person? And what I tell them is, well, first, you're learning that chaos is not love. So your nervous system is familiarity to unreliability, maybe toxic patterns.
I had to go to therapy for this, Mark. I had to go to therapy to learn this, that chaos is not love. Because everything in my life up until that point, started with my dad, was pure chaos and pain. And that was my example of love. That's such a powerful statement.
Well, and then who are we when we're not in chaos? Mm-hmm. And if you look like from a nervous system perspective, that is both fight and flight, right? But that also is like the experience of not being able to move in a direction is when indecision is showing up. Like I just can't decide, or I sabotage good things. a lot of that is actually immobilization. It's freeze. It's just showing up as mm-hmm. I don't know what I should do. And so when we're children, we often learn to subcontract authority to other people because we don't trust ourselves. We were taught not to trust ourselves. And also because maybe we had to ignore red flags in order to stay in our family system. We had to disassociate from the connection to our nervous system and our intuition. So when we start dating again and we have to create like a drug addict would, we would say, I just actually can't date any chaos. Like from now on, it's only availability and it's only reliability. And as soon as I notice myself getting dysregulated, I'm going to learn how to process that. But what is interesting on the other side of this is that I also want people to be able to start to differentiate when what they're actually picking up in the kindness is manipulation, mm-hmm. is actually that it's not necessarily authentic. And that's why, although we are definitely choosing more emotionally attuned people in general, regardless of whether it's men or women, we have to be mindful that sometimes that attunement is contrived. So what are we ultimately attracted to? We want kind people who've got badass boundaries, mm-hmm. because boundaries are hot. Like there's nothing hotter.
I just reposted that post of yours that boundaries are hot. Like
so sexy.
I think one of the things I've learned to value about myself most in my post-divorce life, because I was a boundaryless hot mess before my divorce, is my ability to say no without an explanation. And like to tell my husband now, like, shut the door. Don't talk to me for an hour. I need that. You know, like that creates a level of respect we have respect, but to be able to say that and know who you are with such certainty, that's confidence. And that's the confidence that people say is sexy. And it starts with knowing yourself enough to know where you need to set those boundaries. It's so important.
Yeah. We want integrated men, integrated women, right? Mm-hmm. Like people who their kindness is correlated with a voice and access to a no. Mm-hmm. And so that's ultimately what we're truly looking for. And mm-hmm. so when in the book, we talk about triggers, but we talk about good triggers. And we don't often think about good triggers because like triggers, what I'll hear a lot of people say is, you know, I've been doing the work. I've been looking at the stuff. I started dating again. I got triggered and I'm like, man, I'm starting all over. And I'm like, no, you're not. The trigger doesn't go anywhere. It's a brilliant radar that recognizes patterns, behaviors. It might be overtly sensitive, but that's okay. What you mm-hmm. start to learn is, I believe that triggers are always an invitation to mastery. They're an invitation to mastery of a skill that we needed in the moment when we didn't have it.
I always say, put something on your to-do list for yourself, your greater like awareness of self. Like, oh, okay, I need to look at that. I need to explore that. I need to know why I felt that in that moment. I agree with you 100%. But that word trigger has also become part of like the gaslighting, narcissist, toxic language.
I'm triggered.
I'm so triggered because I missed my, appointment today. I don't know.
I saw a really funny comedian who said that if we were to send young people to war today, we'd be like, have you ever shot a gun? No, but I've been triggered. It was pretty funny. I do think we are in a hypersensitive culture to that, of course, where we're seeing triggers as being evidence that the environment needs to change. But mm-hmm. sometimes, and that again is more of, which I'm not saying we shouldn't have safe relationships and safe spaces, but sometimes what we're asking is for everyone else to create a space of quote unquote safety for someone who actually hasn't integrated their reactivity. So they want to mute the world and change the world and change other people's behavior instead of actually learning how to self-regulate.
But this is my issue with, anybody who works with me or follows me knows, don't come to me and say, I need help dealing with the narcissist in my life. I need help moving forward from that. Like it's all about putting a label, and it's not my fault because that person has a label, and I'm so with that. It makes me crazy. I'm so jealous of you being able to leave the gram. Guys, if you're like new to this podcast right now, Mark Groves is leaving Instagram. So you better go follow his podcast. Go on YouTube. And now we got to segue into the book because I could talk to you all day. Liberated Love is the book he's putting out with his wife, who has been divorced and has really great insight and understands what we are all going through. We all leave a marriage and have to actually, we we sign the divorce papers and we get legally divorced, but the emotional divorce is something completely different. And that's learning to break the codependency. This book is the perfect thing to get into your hands. What would you say if you were like, the one piece you hope everybody takes from this, because I don't want people buying this book and thinking they're going to read it and find the love of their lives as soon as they close the book, right? It's not about the other person. It's about you. So what do you hope each and every person can take away from this?
To actually use what you're going through, whatever brings you to this conversation, to use it to completely transform and change your life, to use it to liberate you from people-pleasing, from abandoning your needs, your wants, your desires, your dreams. Like we were saying earlier, it's wild that people do it when they're out of relationship. And my wife and I say, create it in relationship. Even though you might not be in one right now, come so alive. Come so alive through your divorce. Like, I hear people say like, oh, go get a revenge body. I'm like, sure, do that. Get a badass body. Get super healthy. But nourish yourself in every way. That it isn't just about nourishment of food. It's about nourishing choices, nourishing people, nourishing self. Get a revenge soul. That's how I say it. It's like, get a revenge soul. Become where you don't even give a shit about them seeing what's going on in your life. Mm-hmm. And don't stay stuck in the suffering. Use the suffering. The suffering is, this is material. This is alchemy. This is like, holy shit. There's a saying from Francis Weller where he says, don't waste a good divorce.
I've never heard that.
It's like, what are you doing with it? You're going to sit around and mope? Sure. We're not saying don't have grief.
No thanks.
We have a whole section. Our book has a whole section on grief. It's a necessary part of the process.
Yeah.
But, you know, we think about it all of being, we're talking about like go into the descent, get more connected to yourself, come fully, fully freaking alive from your relationship experience.
Yes, I love it. And you are, I mean, it's in your eyes, like how connected you are to this work and how much it means to you. And I hope it makes the little Mark, the inner child Mark, really proud, because I feel like he needed you to become this person. So beautiful stuff. And please, please congratulate your Kylie, sweetheart. I wish I could have met her, but hopefully another time. So the book is out April 16th.
Yeah, April 16th. You can get it wherever you get your books. If you go to createthelove.com/liberatedlove, there's a free meditation and a workbook that goes with it. And you can get it has links to all the places to buy the book. If you like audiobooks, Kylie and I talk about each chapter after the chapter. So we actually have an unscripted, like we just jam on certain principles of
I love that.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Well, best of luck to you guys. Thank you so much for being here. For everybody listening, I know your mind is blown and I like it like that. So we'll see you next time on Moms Moving On. So you want to be a divorce coach, but the term divorce coach is a broad one because there is just so much you can cover in the world of moving on. Maybe you find yourself gravitating towards clients with high conflict co-parents, or perhaps you have a knack for helping women pull themselves out of bed when they feel overwhelmed with single mom responsibilities. No matter your ideal client, the one thread that will unite them all is that they're moms, and moms need a different level of support when it comes to divorce coaching. With my Moving On method, you'll not only learn how to best support a client through their divorce, you'll also learn how to help support them as they transition into their new role as co-parents and managing a coaching business. I'm Michelle Dempsey-Moltak, certified divorce and co-parenting specialist, and I founded the Moving On method after years of working with clients from all over the world and seeing them all struggle with the same issues. In this training, you'll learn my 5 principles for helping a client with their moving on process, along with how to make your practice successful. Visit momsmovingon.com today to apply for my program. Thank you for joining us on today's episode of Moms Moving On. I hope you found today's episode to be helpful, inspiring, and give you the advice you need to feel empowered and strong as you move on. Don't forget to come say hi on Instagram at @TheMichelleDempsey and drop us a line if there's a specific topic or subject you'd like us to discuss. Thanks. Stay strong.